Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Jennifer Stewart. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Mike. Thank you so much for having me today. It's great to be here.
I'm honored and humbled to have you, and it was great to see you again in Dallas just a few weeks back. And let me do a quick intro. So Jennifer is the owner and founder of Phone Phoenix Agency, an REI data source complementary company serving real estate investors, seeking off-market acquisitions through cold calling, lead management, virtual acquisition management, list pooling, skip tracing, and wholesaling. To complement her buyer's community, she's also a hard money lender, and you do wholesaling and wholetailing. And I'll stop. That's enough of the introduction. It's very technical. So let's go to the journey. First of all, I just want to say we need more successful women leaders in real estate. You're one of them. So
thank you,
it's
Mike.
So good to have you. Thank you for your leadership and adding some great energy to the space. So tell a little bit about your journey, your family, where do you live, and all the fun stuff. But start with kids, cats, pets, or anything that works for you.
Yeah, so I have two chickens and a cat. One of my chickens is a rescue. She only has one leg, so she hops around, but she hops around pretty quickly. And I get to interact with her as I work from home throughout the day. And my cat, she's a very strange cat. You know, she doesn't care for mice at all. Sometimes, you know, we live right behind a field, and whenever they mow, the mice will find their way in despite our best efforts. And she could care less, you know. So we have glue traps that do that job instead of the cat. So, you know, pets are funny. Like you think activity is species specific, but it turns out it's pretty personality specific sometimes. Just like you talked about being.
If you feed them well, they don't have to hunt for money.
Yeah.
My cat did the same thing a while back. We had to go away. We had to give the cat to my wife's parents. And they live in a building. And apparently the cat caught a mice. And she didn't kill the mice. She just played around with the mice and released her. So it can happen. If they're fed, they don't need to.
They don't want to do that. Yeah. And then I have two boys. I have one who's 14 that you got to meet there in Dallas, Bruce. And then I also have Adam, who's turning 9 at the end of this month. And then I have been with their father since I was 16, and I'm now 39. So 23 years with him. And I could not be a business owner without him. He does everything else, so that all I have to do is focus on the business. And his mother was a CEO for a very large home health company. I won't say which one, because they ended up in scandal, although she was totally found innocent. But she was a CEO of a very large company at the time. And she was making $1 million a year as a CEO in 1994, which is, you know, probably about $3 million in today's dollars, if you would agree with that, Mike. So, you know, so for him, women being successful is very normal. And in fact, he's not very happy with me whenever I'm not successful. If I'm not making $1 million a year, he's kind of wondering, you know, Jennifer, you know, what are you doing? You're kind of slacking. And my dad is the same way. He expects me to perform at high levels. You know, he used to travel around the world installing telecommunications cords to countries that didn't have telephones in the 90s. Like, I remember him going to Jakarta and central parts of Africa to lay down all types of hardware so that there could be phones in places where we take for granted there's not only phone but internet now. And so he expects me to be very intrepid, fearless, and profitable. So, you know, like I said to you at the table whenever we're at that event, it's easy to be a woman in business whenever you're surrounded by gentlemen who support you, who are true gentlemen, who are not intimidated by the fact that somehow by you being successful and female, it lowers their status. It's quite the opposite. They see the feminine strengths that you bring that complement masculine strengths. And so therefore, those are the type of people you want to look for as you build your teams and your alliances, and not the people who do subtle digs at you, which of course I had my fair share of that, but that's just water off a duck's back, because it's like, you can't pay attention to that stuff. Just like being a politician, you just have to focus on your goal, find your team, find your allies, and just keep going forward. See who you can help, right? That's what business really is who can we help and how.
That's wonderful. You're blessed with a wonderful family.
Thank
your
you.
Hobby, I guess, is a wonderful hobby. It's been supporting you for so many years, and you have great kids, and it's certainly a journey. And I have to say, my oldest daughter is the same way. She's going to be the breadwinner in the family, and her husband is kind of laid back, fully supportive, happy with the role that he has. It's let's just call it the new generation. It's hard for me to say. Of course, as a father, I want my daughters to be super successful. So all my girls are kind of leaders and self-starters and go-getters. So when I see another successful woman, I am very happy to see this. It is just too traditional to have typically men leading the households. And there's nothing wrong with women being the leaders. And it's a personality thing. Some men, they're pretty happy to find a wonderful woman who can lead the household and be a successful business person. So from my perspective, I'm just hearing this and I'm reflecting. That's wonderful. You found a great combination, and you got to find the right man who will be happy with that. Not everyone will be. So
that's true. That was not easy to find. Luckily, I found it pretty young, but I do see a lot of men tell me whenever I travel around and speak, even my host will say, Jennifer, I'm the one who invited you here to speak, but I would really struggle to be in his spot and just take a back seat. And I said, he's really the boss. He just lets me be the boss because he knows it makes me happy. So isn't that an interest? He can change that dynamic at any time. He's stronger than me. I'm the one who loves the children. And I notice a lot of times there's one parent who could leave and probably still lead a happy life. That's more him than me. I'm much more family oriented. I'm not happy unless I'm with my family. And I think he kind of longs for a day where he can just go out in the woods and not have to worry about children. So, he could be the boss if he chose to, but he lets me do it because he knows it makes me happy. And he said, all I want is for you to be happy, because when you're happy, the kids are happy. And when the kids are happy, I'm happy. And so it just kind of goes in this circle, right? And also it comes down to competency as well, right? And it just so happens that I was never happy unless I was in a leadership position, not because there aren't better leaders than me, but because I had my own vision that was different from theirs. Right? Like there's someone we may know mutually, and he's in CG. His name is Joe Terrio. He was my boss for a little bit doing acquisitions. Great guy. And he said, Jennifer, why don't you go out on your own? Like so he was one of the few people that I worked for who said, here, let me help you go out on your own. He didn't ask for anything in return. He didn't ask for any equity in my companies. But I do things to help him all the time, even though it's been 5 years. So I am very loyal to people who helped me along the way. I believe that you should dance with the one who brought you to the dance. And I don't forget about people over time. I always remember who helped me whenever I had nothing and just figured I would be a lowly acquisitions person, by contrast, or so they try to make me feel. But Joe Terrio, he didn't do that. In fact, he's the one who told me to go to your dinner that first night. He said, hey, Big Mike's coming into town. You need to sign up for his dinner here, and you need to show up to that. And I said, okay, Joe, thank you. So he's the reason why we know each other. So I loved working for Joe, but he said, Jennifer, your talent is wasted here working for me. Go start your own company. And so I was lucky to have people like that in my life.
I appreciate you sharing that. And yeah, Joe is a great guy, and it's a great, it demonstrates great confidence in his own abilities, and being able to step back and let you succeed is a wonderful quality. So, but let's talk a little bit about business. Let's
Sure.
Talk about how did you get started as a business owner, and what's been your journey growing your business? Because It's not easy. Any business is hard. You have also
That's
family, kids, and most men rely on a woman to take care of the kids. I certainly, my
yes.
wife makes a big difference in our household because if I were to feed the kids and take all this stuff, they'd be hard. They'd be hungry every day. I even had to call my wife and ask, "What am I supposed to give the kids for lunch?" Because she's working today. She's an optometrist. So it was kind of
That's
funny to
great.
have these conversations. When I'm home, well, I work from home, but when kids are home in the summer, they didn't go to a camp or whatever. How do I feed them? What do I do? And some men get lost, and I'm one of these guys who I don't know what to do. What how am I supposed to keep fit? What do they eat? And it's just, how long have you been around the kids? And it gets hilarious. So.
It's a pretty domain-specific skill for sure, and it's hard to wear many hats. So you ask a great question. Whenever I had my children and they were babies, they were my sole focus. So, keeping it in the context of business, that was an evolution. So when I first gave birth, I breastfed my children until they were 3 years old. Now, you never knew that was going to be on your podcast, so I'm talking about that. But it was really important to me to be completely present whenever my children were babies. So from age 0 to 3 for my first, I was a full-time mother. And then I went back to college and graduated summa cum laude with a bachelor's of science in psychology. And then right after I graduated, 2 months after I gave birth to our second son, stayed home another 3 years and was just a full-time housewife. At that time, he paid all the bills. And he was a bicycle mechanic. So we were right at the poverty line, but I had a vision, Mike, and the vision was once my children got to a certain age, then I was going to start my career, but not until then. So we endured at the poverty line for all those years to give children a mom who was completely focused. And luckily, Daryl shared that vision with me. I know a lot of men who were a little bit more materialistic and they wanted their women to go back to work so they could have a nice truck. And there's nothing wrong with that. That just wasn't our vision. So as soon as Adam, our youngest, turned 3, I put him in daycare full time, which was very hard. But then all of a sudden, my career took off. So with a psychology degree, what can you do? I wanted to possibly go get my PhD in epigenetics, behavioral epigenetics. And my GPA was good enough to do so, but and Daryl said, "I am not, I cannot stand by you through another degree. I need you to work, please. We've suffered for so long." I said, "Okay, you're right. You're right. We've been poor long enough." So I had a friend of mine. She said, "Hey, why don't you cold call for this investor friend of mine?" She said, "You have one specific talent, and that is your ability to read people's motivations. You've had it." She'd known me since middle school. She said, "You've had it since middle school. Now you have a degree behind it. Please come and call for my investor boss." She's out of Seattle. Her name is Heather Saylor. And I said, "Great. How much does it pay?" She said, "$5 an hour." Because, they're used to hiring the Filipino VAs. And I said, "Okay, I'll do it." She said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah, I absolutely, I'll do it." And Daryl, my husband, he's like, "No way, you didn't get a degree to make $5 an hour." My grandma said, "You didn't, how could you get go with 70K in student debt for $5 an hour?" I said, "Give me 10 years. Give me 10 years and see where the skill set leads me." So I could see the potential of how the hardest part in any deal is not finding the funding. It's finding the deal and negotiating. So I figured if I got good at that, everything else would come. All the other knowledge would be easy by contrast. So I spent several years between $5 and $15 an hour. The poverty continued for another few years as I built up the skill set. And he was working and we separated for a bit. I think the poverty had gotten to him. He's like, "I'm out of here." So then I'm a single mom. And I have to pay the bills on $15 an hour. So I would start at 8 a.m. on the East Coast calling for Joe and then call all the way until 11 p.m. calling for investors in Hawaii for several years. And so In about 8 years, I put in, well, let's see, closer to six or seven then, I'm thinking. Yeah. I put in about somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 hours on the phone with sellers. That's an insane amount because it was 6 days a week for several years, right? And
Yes,
so,
it's the mastery, they call it, like the book Outliers, 10,000 hours. You've put it at least that, more than that, to build incredible mastery, to achieve a level of, I don't know if you want to call it a grandmaster of these lead negotiations, but it's certainly a phenomenal investment, and that gives you the skills. I've given you the skills that you have today. And in real estate, you make money on the buy. You just got to get the buy, right?
exactly.
You got to get the deal.
Exactly. So even though I didn't make much money learning that skill, it was well worth it because from that skill set, a gentleman named Jim Ingersoll recognized how many hours I was putting in. And I'll say, from his perspective, my talent. Talent combined with skill and experience and education with my psychology background. So he put me on stage, and I thought, it was 2021, and I'm not sure he was having an easy time finding speakers. So he said, "Jen, will you come and speak at my event?" And I thought, "Well, sure, I'll do Jim. I'll do my good buddy Jim Ingersoll a favor. I'll go speak at his event." Well, little did I know, he was doing me the biggest favor of my life because then I was speaking in front of hundreds of real estate investors, most of them with a net worth of at least a few million. But I thought, why is he having me speak in front of these people who already know how to do this? How else would they be so wealthy? Well, little did I know how many people buy from other people and not necessarily directly themselves, because I'd always worked for people who were having me buy directly. So once I got off stage from speaking at that event, I couldn't get to the bathroom for 2 hours because people had bombarded me off the stage. They wanted to know, after my presentation, how can I learn what you do? And I was overwhelmed. I didn't have coaching, anything. I didn't plan on being a coach. I didn't have anything to sell. And I was just like, oh my gosh, nobody prepared me for what was going to happen. But from that, I was introduced to many people, and that's how my companies were born. I had a data and skip tracing guy, supplier who came to me and said, "Hey, you have a big following." Now, not big, I mean, but I'll say a very interactive following, a very loyal following, very niche following. You have this following. Can you sell the data? I don't know. And then I had already started my agency in 2018, but all of a sudden I had a better labor supply because people were saying, "Hey, are you tired of trying to deal with managing Americans? How about I bring you all my Egyptian callers, all my Filipino callers?" And they were just as good for one-fourth the price often. And so it was being put on stage that gave me the connections to have access to the supply as well as a ready-made buying audience. And of course, I had to do the work of quality control, making sure that I was honest, had integrity, stayed on top of everything. And so, of course, I had a big learning curve to go from, $15 an hour to between 40,000 and 60,000 a month, which is going to be way less than some people that listen to your podcast, and maybe way more. So that's not a brag. I'm just telling you that was quite a huge increase in income very quickly with a lot of responsibility. And so there were some learning curves there. There were some business maturity learning curves there. The first time someone was unhappy and they were making threats, I thought, my God, this is insane. I mean, people really get crazy anytime you own a business. You have to just be prepared for a client to be crazy or staff to be crazy. And that I wasn't really prepared for, but you do that a few times and you start to realize who's going to be crazy up front so you can avoid it, before you even get started with somebody. And then also, different things like entities, taxes, standard operating procedures, that was all new. So I was just trying to respond to the demand for my services that just went up atmospherically after speaking in 2021. So that's how it got started. It was a combination of hard work and luck. If Jim Ingersoll hadn't put me on stage or Joe Terrio hadn't introduced me to people and encouraged me, I might still be calling for, 15, 20 bucks an hour with inflation, and that would have been my life. So luck is a huge factor, I think, in anyone's success if they're being honest, as well as being right place, right time, and putting in the work behind it. But there's a chance that you could put in all this work and never see glory, right? So I would just say to anyone out there who's putting in a lot of work and they're not seeing glory, they're not seeing a lot of profit, believe in what you do and just keep pushing, right? Because I enjoy talking to sellers. I enjoy helping them solve their problems. I enjoy helping them enjoy the process of selling assets at a discounted equity position. I mean, that's not a fun thing. I mean, nobody wants to sell assets at a discount of their equity. I mean, that takes a real skill set of identifying who needs it and also making them feel good about it and feeling good about you as a person, that you're not taking advantage of them, that you're helping them. It's a privilege, it's an opportunity, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah, Jennifer, thank you for sharing this, because what you just said is actually a very powerful and unique skill. And I've operated mostly in commercial real estate, so I've seen a lot of people do this through the collective genius and dealing with these situations. But ultimately, real estate is all about, it's an inefficient asset class, or an inefficient, well, at least private transactions are inefficient. And what it means is that the sellers typically have to be motivated to give you a good deal. So good deals are happening all the time in these private transactions. So you, as the buyer, need to be able to connect with them and make them feel happy, even though they're not necessarily getting a perfect price. But it's all a question of basically meeting their expectation versus what the market can do. And if you can't make a deal with them, they can't sell the house. Is it?
That's
They'll never
right.
sell the house for the price that they want, unless they lease the property on the market, they fix it up, et cetera, et cetera. So
Exactly.
if they you cannot get everything at the same time. You either get your price, or you get your transaction fast, or you get whatever other needs. And what you do is important, because if you understand all these factors, you create an opportunity for yourself to buy at a discount, and you solve their problem, whatever the problem is. And if they're not motivated sellers, it's okay. They can go and sell
That's
their house
right.
on their own. So that's it's an attitude of abundance, and I've seen it done many times. And if it's done the right way, it's a win-win. It's difficult. Most of the time, you think about it, well, I win, they lose, I got a great price. That's not how the whole thing transacts. It transacts, it's a win for them. And it's a win for
Right.
you. If you could present it that way, it can be a win for both parties. That both parties can walk away with what happens. I've watched this many times when you get a motivated seller for whatever the reason. I've seen either they're old or they have family, and I'm not an expert in the field.
Right.
But as long as you meet their happiness, it's not about every dollar and every deal. So,
Well said.
well, let's go back to your kind of journey. How many folks you manage today, and your evolution going from a single practitioner just doing these calls to being business owner and dealing with all elements of a business, like you said, operating the
Yeah.
company, operating the business, and then obviously managing teams of folks. I'm just curious, how many folks you're managing today? They work for you one way or another.
I have a staff of about 200, but I don't manage them all directly. That would be insane. So I have, as you know, so I have team leaders for each country that I operate in. So, well, I have actually two in Egypt, two in Pakistan, and three in the Philippines. That, so there's five man, so each one has about 40 people that they manage and oversee. But then I also do talk to most of them directly as needed. So I kind of have memorized all of their personalities. But the only way that's possible is because I acquired them over a period of time. So each person who's new, I spend about an hour with them, maybe sometimes 30 minutes. I get to know them. And then I start to see their strengths and weaknesses. So as I have a client come in, whether it's data, skip tracing, someone who needs acquisitions coaching, cold calling, appointment setting, whatever it is, or hard money lending, even, which, I don't want to be in bad taste and Talk about that. In fact, I look forward to hopefully borrowing from you guys someday, as appropriate as deals come in. But I have to think about how does my staff correlate to the personality and needs of the client? And I kind of have it memorized. So I will directly interact with someone and say, hey, for example, Monique, I think this client would be great for you based on, your personality and their needs. And so I do some of that. I am still the one who does the client acquisition. I'm still the one who attracts the client. I haven't been great at replacing myself in that role. So I do kind of memorize who everybody is and then send them accordingly, but I'm not the one who manages the day to day. That would literally be impossible. So
But
I have team managers.
just explain. See, it's a large team. You acquire the clients, meaning that folks that sign up with you for your services. And your
Yes.
services is calling for leads, data management, skip tracing, number of other related services. And it's a big operation. 200 people feels like I don't think I can manage 200 people. It's a lot. I
Yeah.
would rather manage 10 than 200, and in your business, I guess you need to do it in volume because that's how the business
Yes. Well, there's very little profit per unit. Per hour is maybe a dollar profit, and then per skip trace is a cent. I sell my skip tracing for very inexpensive. It's 2 cents per skip trace, right? So I don't mind sharing what my profit margins are. But also, I have to make sure it's fairly high quality too. So in order for me to make the profit, it has to be at a high volume. And without high volume, then it's really not worth the trouble, right? And so in a slowing market with interest rates, I've seen the volume go down. But so what we've done is we've pivoted to doing calls for other industries, like, let's see here. Anything from Russians coming to me wanting me to sell lighted mirrors to hotels, Indian magnate, like paper magnates, guys have these big toilet paper companies and napkin companies they want me to sell to restaurants, or people in China who are selling these lights that go on top of Jeeps, So I was a generalist before I became specialized in real estate in terms of sales. So I've had to somewhat go back to those generalized roots to maintain the volume. Because of interest rates in real estate. However, I will say my real estate clients who are still in the game, still doing the cold calling, appointment setting, and acquisitions over the phone, they're killing it because so few people are still doing it. So for everyone who's like, oh, it was saturated, well, right now it's not saturated, at least not in most markets. So that
That's
is a
an interesting
difference.
observation. Yeah, I didn't realize this. Of course, transaction volume falling through the floor because of the higher for longer interest
Yes.
rates. But I guess the ones who are left are the survivors, and they're doing well. So,
Yeah, kind of like in Forrest Gump, whenever there was that hurricane and Forrest Gump was the last
yeah, all the
boat
boats
he
got
was
washed
getting on
out, and then the
the
only remaining boat is
ship.
to get all the fish.
But I can't charge those few remaining boats exorbitant prices that make me uncompetitive. So I'm still at the same price for the few boats left that are killing it. And so, like you noticed, I always told Tom Barry, I said, Tom, if my business ever slows down, I'm going to start doing my own deals. So, like we discussed before, I'm
What are
finally
you doing
able to do
now?
my own deal.
You're doing
Yeah,
your own.
so I'm looking at hotels in Dallas. So I have that skill set of doing acquisitions over the phone, obviously, but it's kind of an all day, everyday thing. It's not something you can do quickly. So I feel like I've earned the right to purchase from other wholesalers now instead of finding my own deals. So I'm finding properties from other wholesalers. I'm checking them out in my dead time, going to them in person. And if the numbers work, then I'll slap them on the mark because I have my license with eXp for referral purposes and also team building and also access to hedge funds. And so now that volume is down, I feel like it's time for me to do my own deals. And that's exciting, Mike. I kind of wish I'd done it years ago, but I was scared. I was scared I would make an expensive mistake. And I was, I didn't also didn't want to compete with my clients. Think about that. I mean, if your clients know that you're doing deals, some of them have even said to me, well, Jennifer, now that you're doing deals, how do I know you're not going to do my deals? I'm like, because you could tell someone that I was doing your deals and then I'd completely lose my reputation. I told a guy yesterday, I said, look, reputation is like a gun. You can use it to feed your family or you can use it to shoot yourself with. And I prefer to use my reputation to feed my family. So there was that aspect too. I didn't want clients to feel like I was in competition with them and what they were doing. I just wanted to purely be the acquisitions professional, like the person who sells the picks and the axes to the prospectors, right? Versus being a prospector myself. But now that it's gotten so slow compared to where it was, I'm happy to start doing my own deals, and that means I need lender relationships, which is why I went to Quest Trust a couple of weeks ago and saw you. But I have to figure the more lenders, the better, because the easier it is to scale, and the more it makes it easier to do more deals and more markets.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's you're evolving. You're evolving with times, and you'll figure out what is the next chapter in your journey. But for sure, you have a great skill set on the acquisition front, and the environment will get better. I do feel that inventories will improve, and then being able to buy right and to
Yes.
it's a very different environment because residential versus commercial. Commercial has been corrected by the higher for longer rates. Residential, higher for longer rates killed all the supply. People are not selling their homes because they
Right.
got fixed rate debt. They don't want to get rid of it. So it's kind of it's a different, very bifurcated experience. But you can make money in both. You could find deals. Either you buy high and you sell even higher, or you look for bargains. Right? It's just you've got to figure out what you're working on and figure it out.
One of our tips that I tell my clients is you do not want to market your list to occupant sellers, to your point. People don't want to sell at 4% and, get 8%, right? For the most part, they can't afford it even if they wanted to. And so all of my marketing lists are geared toward vacant, absentee, tired landlords. Some people really like the distressed one, pre-foreclosure, divorce. I personally don't prefer those for my own acquisitions because it's more of a longer play. And as you know, like Joe Theriault, he did the inherited properties. That's how he kind of made his name. But tired landlords have kind of always been my bread and butter. I like dealing with them. They're professionals. They don't feel like they're being taken advantage of. Kind of like if you're a mechanic and you take your car to a mechanic, you can kind of have a conversation
Talk the
as two
same language,
professionals.
yeah.
Exactly. And I don't prefer to have people feel scared of me or scared of what I mean. A landlord's going to know exactly what I'm doing, and if it works for both of us, then great. So that's what I tell people. No matter what you're marketing to, try to make sure that you're doing properties that don't have an occupant seller in them. And make sure that you spice in some other things in there if you can, tax liens or code violations, things like that, things that are going to make sense in this market, and don't waste your marketing dollars and time trying to get occupant buyer or occupant sellers to to sell their house, because where are they going
It's
to
a
move
very
to?
different motivation. That worked during the days of post 2008 crisis because people were upside down a lot of these assets, and people had nothing to lose.
Yes.
So it was a very different environment. Today, when there is difficulty to move because of the higher interest rates, to move to buy a new home, it's so much more difficult. People are stuck where they are and they don't want to move for many for that and other reasons. But let's wrap up the episode. So this was a very interesting adventure of Jennifer in the world of real estate investing, marketing for deals, negotiating these deals. So any parting words, any final thoughts, how would folks get a hold of you, any good book? And again, you don't provide coaching, but you have services. And how would folks look you up and understand what services you offer and et cetera. So what's the best way
Yes,
to reach out?
I do coaching. Whatever I spoke that first time, I was not prepared to do coaching. But after that, there's so much demand that now that I do, and Jeff Watson, my attorney, who you probably know, was kind enough to put that program together for me about 3 years ago. So I do coaching. My favorite book in terms of sales is going to be the book Go for No. That book taught me how to love rejection. Most people are not great at sales because they're super, super scared of rejection. The book Go for No is kind of this narrative that teaches you how differently your life can look if you simply get rid of your fear of rejection. Instead of having a yes quota, you need to have a no quota. Go for 100 no's a day if you're a high volume person. You think 100 no's, well, you get 100 no's while doing your best, not 100 no's because you self-sabotaged yourself. Because they say that psychologically, Mike, if our goal is, let's say, 4,000 a week, if you hit 4,000 by Tuesday, then you're done, you're golfing the rest of the week, and your future looks very different. But if your goal is to be rejected 100 times, then most likely by the end of the week, you've hit maybe 10 to 14,000 is your goal. And so that's what I always went for. I went for a tally mark of how many times I'd been rejected, which completely changes the dynamic of your success proposals. So I would recommend reading that, because I notice everyone, almost everyone, is really, really scared of upsetting people and not being liked. That cannot be your concern. Your concern needs to be helping them. That's the only concern you need to have. And the amount of times you get in front of people is the other one. It's like I teach my children. And so these can be my parting words. There are two aspects that make us successful in business. The other is attaining and controlling a supply of something that our competitors hopefully can't touch, right? So we need a supply where we can buy low, whether it's the skill set of talking to sellers, whether it's inexpensive but high quality data, whether it's inexpensive but high quality labor. Maybe in your case, it's money that you can get, right? And you can pay a certain amount, but then you need to lend it out at a higher amount. So we need a supply of something that there's some sort of barrier to entry for. And then the other aspect, and then try to control that supply. And I use the word control loosely. I'm not saying we lack an abundance mindset, but we don't just go giving it out willy-nilly, right? It needs that knowledge needs to be earned by someone who's a stakeholder in your life and willing to be maybe a lifelong partner with you in your business. And then the other aspect is ABM, always be marketing. Always be whatever you think you need to do for your marketing, double it. Whether it's posting on social media, whether it's TV, radio, PPC, speaking at events, having a marketing department, whatever it is, never stop marketing. Think, oh, I'm good. You know, I don't want to pay for this marketing budget. I've already made this month, or, oh, I'm busy. I'm going on vacation. Well, you're going to come home to a dead business a lot of times if you go on vacation and someone's not marketing while you're gone. Whenever I go on vacation, I have all my marketing planned out and done ahead of time so that I don't have to think about that while I'm on vacation.
I appreciate your always be marketing. That's a brilliant way to put it. I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you for sharing. We do have to wrap up this episode. As I said, all good things come to an end, and so does this episode. Again, how would folks reach out to you? Is their website, just so you can share? Yeah.
You can email me at jen@reidatasource.net. That's J-E-N at REI for real estate investing, datasource.net. Or something most people don't do is you can call me on my cell phone. Because let me tell you something, Mike. I know anyone who's listening to your podcast is going to be a high quality person. So my personal cell is 469-952-8011. I actually do answer my phone, unlike most people. And if I don't answer, it's because I'm in a meeting. So feel free to both call and or email.
Thank you, Jennifer. I greatly appreciate your sharing your wisdom and
thank you,
your
Mike.
Courage to share your personal cell phone. Not too many people do that.
So. Yeah, well, I'm not scared. I'm ready.
Thank you
ready
kindly. And I really enjoyed this discussion. Until the next time. And enjoy your journey. And I'm wishing you the best of success. And we'll keep chatting. So, thank
Sounds
you.
Great, Mike. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.